Hello, everyone. This is Wendy Treville, and thank you for joining the AAF Fairfield County Chapter Virtual Celebration in celebration of Black History Month. We have a great agenda for you today. Deb Elam is going to actually kick off this event for us, and followed by Valerie Cooper from Picture That, and then we'll have the artist presentation, and we'll close with Q&A. So with that, I'll pass it on to Deb Elam.
Thanks, Wendy. Hi, everyone. This is Deb. It's great to chat with you, even though it's virtually. We live in a high-technology world now at GE, and so given the AAF is always trying to be at the forefront in leveraging technology, we want to be a part of that as well. Welcome again to the celebration of Black History through Art in a virtual way. I want to also welcome Valerie Cooper, who is the curator and owner of Picture That. You'll hear from her in a little while. Larry Poncho Brown of Baltimore, Maryland, Dane Toman of Exton, Pennsylvania, and David Wilson of North Carolina, who are our featured artists. I just want to give you a little brief background on our partnership with Picture That and what it involves, because I realize most of you do not work in the corporate headquarters in Fairfield, and many of you probably have never been to the corporate headquarters, or if you have, it's been relatively infrequent. One of the things we did, my team in Fairfield, probably, I don't know, 6 years ago or so, we wanted to really figure out how to push diversity throughout the company through the medium of art. And so there's a wall, if you will, near our employee cafeteria, and it's a pretty long wall corridor that my team sort of owns, if you will, for the year. And on that wall throughout the year, we display artwork that is representative of various ethnicities, cultures, and gender, if you will, on a rotating schedule. So, for example, for January, February, we celebrate Black History Month, and the AAF really tries to do a lot of different things around that. We will have a Women's History Month piece up. We'll have, for the first time this year, our GLBTA group will have some time up. Our veterans group also for the first time this year, APAF and the Hispanic Forum, respectively. So throughout the year, that wall is really designated a diversity wall. Now, given that many of you never get to come to Fairfield or don't have the opportunity, wanted to be sure that you could really see what is on display at the corporate headquarters of GE. And I think what is on display at the corporate headquarters is a big deal, because that is what resonates with visitors, with the chairman, with other leaders of the company who walk by and have a chance to really look on the wall and see some pretty awesome culturally diverse art depicted, and right now it's of our culture, and I'm very proud of that. It's something I see as almost a lasting legacy of something that we're doing. So I welcome you to this discussion. I hope you ask a lot of questions. I hope you share the online gallery link, which I believe is on the AAF website, with other members of AAF so that if they don't get a chance to see it live, they can see it and enjoy the discussion. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Valerie Cooper of Picture That LLC. Thank you.
Thank you, Deb. And thank you, GE, for welcoming Picture That as well as all of our artists into your headquarters to help promote awareness of culture and diversity through art. The exhibition that we're going to talk about today is called Materialization, Past is Present, and this is GE's fifth annual African American exhibit. The pieces selected for this show employ color and pattern in a way that details with the subject of history in a unique and strikingly stylic manner. And then you'll also see from the rhythmic and vibrant canvases of an artist like Larry Poncho Brown to the quilt work of Cassandra Jennings when you look at the actual online gallery itself, to Dane's narrative work focusing mainly on yesteryear, and also some of David's wonderful corsages, that it's just a wonderful conglomeration of work that will really take you back to the past, but also give fond memories of our history today as present. So with that in mind, we have a nice lineup, as Deb mentioned, of artists that are going to bring with you remarks about their careers, how they ended up as artists, and then they'll walk you through two or three of their pieces, and we really look forward, when they're finished, to hearing from you, because they're looking forward to taking your questions and answering them, and we want to make this as interactive as possible. So with that in mind, we're going to start with David Wilson, who's going to speak with us from North Carolina. And David, when you are ready, you can begin.
Okay, I'm ready now. I want to thank everybody for joining the webinar. I want to thank G, of course, for hosting the event, and for Valerie Cooper, and Picture That, with pulling everything together and including my work in this wonderful exhibition. It's equally as pleasing for me to exhibit with my peers, especially those who I've known for a while, like Poncho Brown, and also with artists whom I've maybe met in passing, or, you know, I've seen their work and appreciated it, and get a chance to exhibit with them, not only in a gallery space, but in a virtual space. So that's all very interesting and exciting as well. So briefly, my career of an artist, I don't know, it's always started since I was a child. I can remember back to, you know, just a toddler sketching stuff and always getting, I grew up in West Virginia, by the way, in a little small town right outside of Morgantown, where West Virginia University is located, if that helps place the geography for you. But as a child, you know, always drawing, always sketching, everything from cartoons to, you know, just things from my imagination. I always got a lot of support from family members, from aunts and uncles to my parents. They would buy me, you know, books on how to draw cats or how to draw horses or, you know, things like that. So they recognized my talent early on, but it wasn't something I really took as a career. You know, like, I knew I was going to be an artist when I got older. As I think with every child, you know, you have dreams of being something great. You know, mine was usually sports-based or something with business. I wanted to be a, you know, basketball player or a track star, or I wanted to be a stockbroker at one point. It wasn't until my junior/senior year in high school that I really started to take my art seriously. And it all stemmed from just going to the library one afternoon and finding a book on the Harlem Renaissance artists, not just the visual artists, but the entire Harlem Renaissance, from poets like Langston Hughes and Zora Neale Hurston to musicians, you know, the whole gamut. It just really, really struck me. And to see the work in there of Archibald Motley and, you know, Aaron Douglas, you know, those artists, just, you know, there's something about the way that they crafted their compositions to include African-American history, you know, it connected to me. And I was like, you know what, that's what I want to start doing with my artwork. So I kind of, you know, had a reevaluation of what I wanted to do with myself. And as I got to applying for colleges, you know, I think the uncertainty of how I was going to support myself started to creep in, and I had friends and family members saying, no, you need to do your art on the side and, you know, go with something that's more substantial and definite. So I went ahead and majored in business. I got accepted to Hampton University, and I was a business major all for maybe like 2 weeks, and I decided, you know, this isn't for me, so I went down to the registrar's office and switched over to a BFA major, and that's what I closed out in. I'm glad I did, because while I was there, I had a chance to cross paths with a lot of great artists and residents who came by there, most notably Dr. John Biggers, you know, great muralist and educator and artist from Gastonia, North Carolina. He was there to create two murals for the a building that was being dedicated, a new building there. So I really had a chance to go in and, you know, just work with him, you know, rinse off his brushes, just sit down and hear stories about how he, you know, came into being as an artist and his trials and tribulations. He would look at my work and critique it and give me, insight on how I could always create something that's fresh and interesting to look at, but at the same time be culturally based. You know, that was the main thing he always preached to me was, whatever you do, make sure you somehow weave your culture into it. So that's what I've been doing ever since Hampton. When I got out of Hampton, I was signed on by Essence Magazine to have my works reproduced as limited edition and open edition prints. That's one of the first opportunities I had to start collaborating and meeting artists who were out there doing their thing professionally, surviving and making a living and gaining notoriety as an artist, Poncho being one of them. That was inspiring for me, and I did that for a while, and then, as I've noticed my career has been, I go through phases, and I started to come into creating, works that I wanted to not take down that path in the print market, but just, work to exhibiting in gallery settings, and I've done that successfully for the past 10 to 15 years, and along the way, I've also branched out and done public art commissions, most notably the last one in Charlotte at the Harvey B. Gantt Center. So if you ever want to Google that and take a look at what that glass mural looks like, you can feel free to do that. But I kind of pride myself on being an artist that's really diverse. I work in a lot of different mediums. I can paint in oils and acrylics fairly well. I also can illustrate very well. I do a lot of graphic design, so my design skills are pretty honed, but the work that you're seeing up on the web gallery, and what you'll see if you go and visit the actual gallery, are a new approach for me. I started out doing collage, and I'm a really big fan of Ramir Bearden's work. If you want to go ahead and put the first work up there, we can take a look at that. So the works you'll see are what I call digital collages. I started out down the path of doing more traditional collage, as Ramir Bearden did, taking scissors or a knife and cutting out magazines or photographs and pasting them down. I started down that path, and I really started to get frustrated after a while, because once you glue down a certain area, it was pretty, locked in, and I may have wanted to go back and change things. So I said, I'm going to mock them up on a computer, and that way I know what they look like. Then I'll go back and be able to construct them the way I really want them to look. But once I started doing it on a computer, I really didn't turn back from there. A lot of the same tools that are available in the Creative Suite, Adobe Creative Suite, I work on a Mac. You have a clipping tool, you have a scissor tool, you have, an airbrush, you have a paintbrush in there that you can change the width or, the amount of stroke, to put down on the brush. So you can get a lot of the same type of effects that you would be painting with using a brush or on a canvas as you can in a computer. So that's what I'm working on now. And these works will be something I probably dabble in over the next year or so. I have a residency coming up in Charlotte this summer where I'll be exploring this technique a little bit more, but the piece you see up now is All in the Family, and it's one of my earlier digital collages. I usually work on a theme. As I said earlier, it's always going to be culturally based or dealing with something that's either personally intriguing to me about our history as African Americans or something that maybe I didn't know about and I'm learning and I want to share with the audience that's looking at the work. So I did a series of works called Heavy Burden, which focused on not so much as the aspect of slavery in our history, but kind of the up from slavery, reconstruction, sharecropping aspect of it. That was a part of our history I wasn't really that aware of. So in studying that and going through a lot of the photographs I found, would weave in, like the picture of the woman you see here. It's an untitled photograph, and there wasn't really any history behind it, from what I could find at least. And the photograph to me, just looking at her face, you know, it told a story. There's a almost like a haunting story that I feel is trying to be told in it, and the images you see kind of woven in there in the top right-hand corner with the house, a plantation house, and down in her lower left-hand part of her her clothing, you see also an old vintage photograph of a slave owner's family with a domestic worker there in the corner. I don't know if you can zoom in on that or how good the quality will be, but I just like to try to weave in photographs that can lend the viewer maybe their own interpretation on what it is that I was trying to say. I usually don't try to put too much of a story out there. I like to, whatever I create, you know, kind of keep it to where it was a personal exploration for me, and I don't want it to be someone else's exploration. I want them to kind of look at it and draw from what they can. But technique-wise, you know, you see kind of a scratchy look to it. That's actually just a photograph of a piece of distressed wood. I think it was like an old door from a slave quarters that I took in, laid in as a layer, because all of this was being constructed in Photoshop. And those little white image you see as a border around there, those are all cotton bowls. So again, you know, just trying to find different aspects that dealt with our history, and iconography, you know, is a big thing for me. You know, John Biggers again taught me that you can tell a story through symbols, you know, a million times stronger and maybe even more meaningful than you can through actually just, you know, painting a picture of something. So, you know, the cotton balls in there, you know, symbolically tell a story. And then, you know, the scratches in the wood can, you know, tell a story about, you know, the struggle and the how harsh it was as far as with the reality and to live during that time. So there's lots of symbolism that I weave into my work. If you want to go to the next piece, we can kind of explore that same thread as well. And the next piece will give you a, I guess, a little insight as to the evolution of some of the digital collages I've done. This one is titled Beginning Hope. Again, the same approach, working more so this time with Illustrator and Photoshop, you know, like the feather that's in her, behind her ear there, that was just an overall graphic image that I took and just freehand clipped it to make it look like a feather. This piece was created right after the Haiti earthquake, so it's kind of my commentary on the enduring struggle that we face, you know, as a people in that area. But again, I leave it up to the viewers to kind of, you know, look at all the different symbols and images that I've woven in there and kind of construct their own interpretation on what it means. Like, you know, the fire that's burning there in her throat could mean something different to you than it does to me. To me, it may have just been a nice graphical element that I chose to wove in there, but to you, it might symbolize something else. So a lot of my work I leave up, you know, to the viewer and kind of keep it open like that. But you'll see, I think, in this one a little bit more stylized, a little bit cleaner. The colors, of course, are brighter and bolder than the first piece we looked at. And again, that's why I entitled, you know, Beginning Hope. I wanted to make, you know, something bright out of something, you know, blightful or something bleak. The fire also, to me, not so much as, even though it's a fire showing that, you know, the destruction that happened right after that earthquake, you know, fires that were still being lit in the streets and in neighborhoods, you know, to me the fire is kind of like a symbol for, you know, not to give up. You know, that fire can continually burn, you know, in the Haitian people and even in us, to stay connected to their struggle and somehow, some way to keep giving back to, you know, make things better. And if we have enough time, we can go to the third piece, the final piece, and take a look at that and have a little brief talk and hopefully leave enough time for some questions. I know I probably went over a little bit, but if we want to stop there now, it's up to you, Valerie. You know, you've feel like we can go ahead and stop here and leave a little Q&A open.
Why don't you talk briefly about Washerwoman, since it's on,
okay,
and very intriguing. And
okay,
then, Wendy, I'll let you decide, you know, whether you need to move it forward or not.
Okay. Well, very briefly, Washerwoman, that's the last piece you'll see here. Again, it's also a digital collage. This piece was a little bit more approached as an abstract, kind of more in the traditional vein of maybe a Bearden collage. But again, it pulls from either personal history experience by myself growing up in West Virginia. My grandmother, I can remember, she lived way down in the southern part of the state in a little small city outside of Charleston, the capital. And I can remember going down to visit her, and you know, that was an everyday weekend scene, was her going out and hanging, you know, clothes on the line. And hearing my mom talk about those stories and, you know, what it used to be. I can remember my dad talking about stories of him growing up and having, you know, his mom and his grandmother hang, you know, clothes out on the line. So just something that's always kind of stuck with me that I might revisit, you know, memory-wise through a piece. There's really no rhyme or reason sometimes to how I come up with ideas for works. It might just be something that's on my mind, or maybe something that happened close to me that sparks an idea or a memory. But again, it's a digital collage, and kind of using the same approach of clipping out, in some cases, maybe portions of existing works of mine, or I'll take a digital photo of a random object or a random texture. I'll go online and use royalty-free textures and images that are out there, like the rope that you see that's in the top part of her basket. You know, that's just a random texture that's out there that you can just download and use. That house, you know, I try to find as many times as possible royalty-free or copyright images that are out there, and incorporate those into my collages. If there is a copyright issue, I try to not, you know, take the actual picture or the actual image in its original state. I at least try to alter it or change, you know, or take a small portion out of it to, you know, preserve and give respect to the person who used their creativity to create the original piece. But in a nutshell, yeah, that's my work. I guess at this time, if anyone has any questions about either my history as an artist or the work that they've seen, I'll be happy to answer them.
Great. Thanks, David. We'll be letting, I think, one person ask a question, then we'll move on to the other two artists. We are accepting questions through chat. You could text your question to me, or you could just put to the host, or you could work with the operator to ask a question live. Is the operator still on?
Yes, I am. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt at that time to acknowledge your request. Your line will then be accessed from the conference to obtain information. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. And if you are using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. One moment, please, for the first question. As a reminder, to register for a question, press 1-4. And our first question comes from the line of Cedric Wells with GE Energy. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Quick question, David. Did you have any withdrawal converting over to doing digital art versus traditional fine art, you know, picking up a brush or a pen or pastel or acrylic?
Yeah, I did. And it's something that I regularly try to break, that habit of maybe wanting, I don't know what it is about the digital collage that really grips me, but it's something that has a hold on me right now. But I definitely try to break that up by regularly going to the brush and the canvas, and, you know, and keeping those skills fresh. I don't think you ever lose them, but at the same time, I definitely like the balance of it. So, yeah, there is withdrawal times or periods where I go back to the brush and go back to the canvas, or go back to, you know, picking up some color pencils and illustrating things just to keep, you know, the creativity moving in that direction. I have to also because, you know, I work and do a lot of freelance stuff, so I might get a commission to go and paint a storefront window for somebody. So I can't, of course, take my computer out there and do that. I have to, you know, keep the brush and the paints handy and keep those ready to roll at any moment's notice. But there's definitely a difference, and I would say there's definitely a withdrawal to it, but I don't think it lessens. I don't think the art is any lesser or cheaper as a result, or I don't think it's any less authentic. I think digital art is probably just a medium or a field that a lot of people don't understand, or maybe a lot of artists haven't taken the opportunity to really push or explore the full limits of it. So that's kind of where I am. I feel like I'm maybe at the vanguard of it, and I'm trying to push it and take it to the next level, especially within the African-American community of artists.
Okay. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from the line of Candace King with GE Energy. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. My question is regarding, you're already speaking about it, the digital imagery technique that you're speaking of. Do you know if there's a new curriculum, since it sounds like it's new, you know, new wave and cutting edge? Do you know if there are now universities that are now teaching this technique, or do you have any familiarity if it's going to become, you know, this new technique or new wave of thinking about art?
I think so. I don't know exactly where this I have an artist friend in D.C. His name is Michael Platt, and you can pick up, again, you can Google and look at some of his work. It's P-L-A-T-T. He does wonderful work, and he works the same way, taking a live model in a lot of instances, and he'll paint on the model, then he'll photograph the model in different poses, then he'll take those digital photographs and weave them into other photographs that he's either taken or found on online resources and create this beautiful end result, composition or image. So he actually works there in the D.C. area, going into the, I think the, I don't know if it's the high school system, but somewhere in the educational system, maybe it's in, on the collegiate level. But he teaches design, and he teaches those techniques of how to take, you know, the digital camera and take the Adobe Creative Suite and kind of merge all those to create, you know, an art that rivals some of your, you know, most original and creative paintings that you see hanging out there behind frames and galleries. So I think it is an emerging field. I think the more that African-American artists kind of embrace it as opposed to, you know, maybe snobbing their nose at it or, you know, turning away from it, thinking that it's not a valid form of art, I think that can only help further the genre or the field out there. So I would love to be able to be a part of that as well. But I do know that one artist, at least, Michael Platt, is taking what he's learned and what he's doing as a passion and back into the school system and working with other young creative artists out there to kind of teach them the same technique.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, David, and thank you for your questions. We'll move on to Dane, and we'll try to leave time for additional Q&A at the end, because that's where the artist loves to answer your questions, and we love the dialogue, so keep the questions coming. We'll move on to Dane.
Yeah, hi. My name is Dane Tillman. I'm from Exton, Pennsylvania. I've been a full-time artist now for 27 years. Grew up in a working-class family. My dad, he always kept a job. Everybody kept a job in my house. Matter of fact, I had 26 different jobs before I went full-time as an artist. I went to a small state school, Kutztown State College. My career as an artist started probably when I was about 5 years old, just basically because I loved to draw. My brother, who was a year and a half older than me, so he was probably about maybe 5 years old, 5.5 years old. I was about 4, and we used to draw together. And when he stopped drawing, I just kept on drawing because the love for it was already in me. So when I went to elementary school, I just started drawing with other artists, other young people who were, you know, drawing dinosaurs or whatever. I wanted to draw what they were drawing. And so I moved on from there, picked it up in high school. Again, I went to a school that had a, you know, a pretty good art program. And then I went to Kutztown State College. And it took 6 years out of college before I went full-time with my art. Those 26 jobs were anything from soup to nuts, working for shipping places, working for mental health institutions, security guard jobs, anything to keep a roof over my head. I finally got to the point where I was just totally dissatisfied with working for somebody, and I said, I got to do this thing. And so I jumped out there just with enough money to pay my rent for 3 months and just hit the ground running. And that's where I started seeing the grace of God. My particular styles, I started out with realism, doing pencil and watercolor in particular. And eventually I moved over to a style I call tall tale art, my elongated style. And then the next style was cubism and then impressionism. And about maybe 15 years into the my career, I changed to acrylic paint, which actually gave me more options. You know, people like texture and whatnot. So, and I started painting acrylic. And I think I'll probably go back to watercolor eventually. But right now I'm having a lot of fun with the acrylic. I want to talk about some of the pieces that I that were are being shown. The first one is called Sunday. Basically, my work is what I call Black Americana, and it's just a reflection of the Black experience. History is one of my favorite subjects. It doesn't matter what kind of history; I just love a good story. So when I paint, I do paint narratives. My interpretation of what I'm looking at. I work from old black and white photography as my reference material. And so everything that you see here, though it's full color, the foundation of it is black and white photography, so the color more or less comes out of my head. So you have a picture here of a family going to church on Sunday, dressed up in their Sunday best. One thing about church back in those days, when you went to church, you went in the morning and didn't come home tonight. So these folks are getting ready to make a full day of it. The next piece I have is called Pool Hall Blues. Yeah, and that piece is a piece of three guys standing in front of a pool hall. The little guy most likely is the guy running the whole show, and his two buddies there are just guys kind of hanging out with him. If you want to play pool, you have to get past that little guy. This particular scene, I believe, is in Memphis, Tennessee, probably from the 1930s, most likely. And the last piece that I have down here is Alone in Brooklyn. Alone in Brooklyn. That particular piece is one of my favorite pieces. It kind of reminds me of a Hugh Lee Smith kind of motif. One thing about Hugh Lee Smith's pieces is that they had a sense of loneliness. And in this piece here, you see a mother and her child most likely getting ready to catch a bus. It's wintertime, although the sun is shining. There's still a sense of loneliness. There's only that one car and nobody else on the block. Notice one thing about the streets. They are absolutely clean. They're spotless. That's the way streets were back then. So I just want to thank you for this opportunity to talk about my work.
Great. Thank you, Dane. And thank you for a quick turnaround time in your paintings. What we'll do is we'll move on to Larry Poncho, and then after Larry Poncho, we'll entertain questions from the audience.
Hello, everybody. My name is Larry Poncho Brown. I'm from Baltimore, Maryland, born and raised here in Baltimore. I'm actually a second-generation artist. My dad was an artist. My dad was a teenage parent, so he had me when he was 17 years old. He was still at school. My dad studied commercial art, and because of his frustration with no outlet, decided to move into printing, which became a vocation for me because as a child, I would help him do printing jobs at home. Sometimes we would do business cards, flyers, neighborhood community-based projects we would do at home. So I learned entrepreneurship very, very early. I decided to follow my dad's footsteps and go to the same vocational education he went to Carver Vocational Technical High School here in Baltimore. And at that point, my interest was comic books, fantasy. I thought I'd be a comic book artist. That's what I thought in an early period. But when I got to the school, they had a strict curriculum of learning sign painting. They call it sign writing. So anything that's a sign is a billboard, windows, trucks, whatever. That's what we did. When I walked in the 10th grade with all of my aspirations to be a comic book illustrator, the teacher says, put that stuff away. This is the only thing you're going to need to learn how to use. And he handed me a lettering brush. So the structure at the school was 3 years. You would learn sign lettering for 2 years, and in your third year, you would get a work-study arrangement. I learned sign painting in 3 months. So I was the first, entry-level student to get a work-study job lettering because I had picked it up that quick. Still frustrated, never liked sign painting, but my teacher's motto was, as long as you got a lettering brush, you'll never starve. And so with that, I decided to start looking for as many sign jobs as I could find. So I already was acclimated into entrepreneurship at 14, 15, 16 years old. And the work study arrangement I got was with other African-American business owners that did sign painting. So before you know it, I had a whole legion of clients that actually helped me keep me off the street and never had to worry about money. But that inner voice of being an artist and doing my art was not being answered at the time. So normally what I would do is after I went to the school, did my sign painting, I would come home and I would still draw and paint. So I'm really a self-taught illustrator because I learned how to draw and paint from looking at books. By the time I got to college, I had no intention really on continuing my education. My plan was to open me up a sign shop somewhere and just go with it. But I got a few scholarships in my senior year to the Maryland Institute College of Art, and my teacher told me this was a rare opportunity. You need to go. And so I with that, I decided to go to college. And so I went to one of the top 10 colleges in art in the East Coast, the Maryland Institute College of Art. And in that structure, I studied graphic design. So now I had my whole high school education that helped me to sustain myself, because even the sign painting helped pay my way through college. And when I got to college, I studied photography, I studied illustration, I studied graphic design. Graphic design ended up being my major. And so I learned all of these trades that essentially would assure that I would not starve, because that was the misconception, is that you would starve. And then that was the setback that my dad suffered through, because he didn't have an outlet. So he naturally didn't want me doing it because he had his own frustration. But on the other hand, the path I chose was one of entrepreneurship. And I think that's the crucial word I want to use. I have been a professional artist for 31 years. And so I've done only different facets of art, from commercial into doing my fine artwork. My original work, again, interest was in comic book illustration. Never got to do that. That reality came down to me when Disney came to our school and gave a portfolio review, and I realized that I wasn't drawing enough. So naturally, I started to do the next thing that I was interested in, which was science fiction and fantasy. So through the 80s, that was all I was in, science fiction and fantasy. Now, I was also a closet graffiti artist. So I was always painting on something that wasn't on paper. But eventually, I had a teacher give me an airbrush. And he basically says, well, an airbrush is just like an aerosol can. It's just a more defined tool. So I learned how to use that. And so my early paintings that I did were all airbrush, really clean, realistic-looking pieces. And those were the first pieces I introduced to the art market when I first broke into the art market in the mid-80s. Again, my father's printing helped me because I wasn't alienated by the process. So in the early 80s, where most artists were trying to figure out how to print their work, I already knew how to do it, and I wasn't fearful of what to do. So naturally, my whole goal was to try to start publishing and producing my work. And so while most other artists were trying to do shows and trying to get in exhibitions, here I was printing little $5 and $10 posters to sell to my friends and family. And so that's how I got my start. Ultimately, my graphic design introduced me to so many people that it helped me along the way. Dick Gregory happened to be one of them. In the mid-80s, he had a product called the Bohemian Diet. and Dick Gregory saw my work and wanted me to work with him to help him do all graphic design and illustrative projects that related to his project. And that lasted for about 8 years, but I can't tell you the slew of celebrities I met during that period of time that acquired my work. So in the mid-80s, I decided to publish my own work and start my own publishing company. And at that point, I had a good relationship with the Baltimore artists, so I began to publish a lot of their works, too, under a company called Melman Graphics. And we did that probably into the late 90s. I've just recently just broke away from the whole publishing realm and began to study, start to focus on doing works that were for purpose. So the last 20 years, I've been doing a lot of pieces that are really created for corporate and nonprofit organizations to help raise funds. The first image you see on the screen is a piece called Street Songs. And Street Songs was actually commissioned by Venture Richmond to commemorate their 21st anniversary of the Second Street Festival that happens in Richmond, Virginia. They actually hired me to do the poster 4 years in a row. This happened to be the piece I did for 2009. And basically what it does, it just captures the whole essence of their festival. It's an outdoor in Jackson Ward in fall. And so if you can imagine this, a bunch of music going on, and vendors, and people walking through. It's just an exciting time. And then I just try to capture their whole energy in this piece. Most of my works are acrylic because I work very, very fast. I can use all the mediums. I use oil, I use pencil, but I really fell in love with their palette knife about maybe 10 years ago. And so most of these pieces are palette knife, and those fine lines you see is the residue of my sign painting days, because I can paint a line as thin as 1/8 of an inch continuously with no problem. This piece looks like it's one piece, but it's actually one level of unstretched canvas and a stretched canvas. So I paint the background, and all the pinks, yellow, oranges you see are the background, and then all the blues, greens were actually painted on another piece of canvas. And then after I finished painting that unstretched piece, I actually glue it to the stretched piece. And so these pieces have a lot of dimension to them when you look at them. You can almost see the different layers, and you're trying to figure out how things interloop. I have three styles. I have one that's very realistic from my airbrush days. I have something that's right in the middle, and then I have these pieces that I call transparency views, and this just happens to be a transparency view. I used to always sketch on tracing paper as a graphic designer to help me come up with my concepts, and a couple times you would lay two or three pieces trace the table on top of each other, and you go, that's kind of nice. So over the years, I began to incorporate that into my final paint. If you go to the second painting, you'll see another version of that type of image. But I also had a major fire in 1995. Prior to 1995, I used a lot of photo references because I was a photography minor. I always took photography because I got tired of using the same pictures that everybody else was using to do their work. And at one point, it was hard to find quality African-American images that you could incorporate into your own painting. And so it's not uncommon for you to look out in the real world and see two or three renditions of a photograph that pre-existed. And I got tired of that happening, so I began to shoot my own photographs. But in 1995, I had a major fire. I lost my whole studio. I mean, I lost everything. It was worst case scenario. I lost probably a million and a half worth of stuff in that fire. And the difference between where I am now and where I was prior to 1995 is I lost all of my references. I had what in high school we called a morgue. A morgue was any picture you saw that you wanted to use down the line, you would tear it out, categorize it, put it in a file cabinet. So I had file cabinets full of images that I could use as reference points. And then when I started studying photography, I had another whole slew of images. But when I had the fire, I lost all of that. And the biggest difference between that work and the work that I'm doing now is that the work that I do now is from imagination. After 1995, everything I did, I said, well, I want to not be dependent on photographs. I want to work from my imagination as much as possible. It's not to say I don't use references anymore, but I don't make them be the central focus of my piece. And this piece here, this was actually commissioned by the Association of Black Psychologists to commemorate their 40th anniversary. They're centered in Washington, D.C. This was done in 2008. Same kind of style as the first piece, a little bit more realistic than the first one, but the image basically talks about our links from our past and our present, You know, you see the parents looking off to the left, looking towards the future. You see the child looking back towards the past. So all the things that on the right-hand side of the painting represent our past. You see symbolism from Egypt, African symbolism, fabrics, Adinkra symbolism. And then on the left-hand side, it's really looking towards the future. So I tried to bridge the gap between both of those generations. And you also see a shape of Africa in the mother's head, which is kind of like a Mother Africa reference. So I don't try to beat people down with blackness because I feel like whatever I paint is going to be black anyway. I can paint a flower and it's still going to have my flavor in it. I don't try to do narratives because I think that at some point people have their own reference point. So no matter what I intend, people are going to always see something different. But I do try to capture a serious mode in my work. My work is usually very introspective. It's about unity. It's about family. Very few smiles and giggles in my work. I want people to look at something and begin to feel what's happening in the painting. If you go to the third painting, it's just another example of that same style, but it was a piece titled Heavy Burdens, and that piece was commissioned by the Wholeness Development Incorporated down in Atlanta, Georgia. They're an organization that raises money for homeless veterans. And so they commissioned me to do this to help them with raising funds. So again, you see that same essence. You see the transparency view. You see all of the texture. There's two or three levels of canvas on that. The same thin lines that I use for my sign painting day. So that's basically the scope of my current work. My website has an overview of the other styles that I have in my work, but this is just my current work. I think that art is an evolution. You know, and you listen to David talk about his process. He's an awesome artist. The fact that he's moving to digital now is something that I think a lot of artists are beginning to do, begin to use more digital references with their work. I use a lot of computer, but I'm restricting myself from utilizing the computer to create my images for now, but I can see that that will probably be going down in the future. So that's the body of work that's exhibited at GE, and if you want to see more of the work, you can always go to my website or online to see more.
Great. Thank you so much, Pancho. At this time, we'll open the floor for Q&A. We've heard three great artists speak about their work. David Wilson, and I believe David had to leave. Is that correct, Valerie?
No, I'm still on here.
Oh, good. Great.
Yeah.
So we have David Wilson, Dane Tillman, and Pancho Brown. So, again, you have the option to text your question on the WebEx or ask the question live using the directions the operator will give you shortly.
As a reminder, to register a question on the phone, press 1-4. And we have a follow-up question from the line of Cedric Wells with GE Energy. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Just wanted to ask another quick question. Do you find it hard to, or do you have to redefine yourself if you decide to make a left or right turn as far as the type of medium that you're going to use?
A wise teacher once told me that art is a series of corrected mistakes. So, you know, you got to remember we're starting from a blank piece of board, a black piece of canvas, a white sheet of paper, and everything you're seeing is illusion. So it's a process. It's a building process. So, and I believe that, it's supposed to go left and right. That's part of the journey. What people view as the end result is nowhere near what the process that was involved.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's interesting too, Pancho. I don't think a lot of people understand, the self-imposed trials that we as artists put ourselves through when we're constructing or creating a piece. I mean, just the simple thought of an idea, like the inception of when it pops in your head, and how much you might toss it and spin it and shape it and fashion it and form it in your mind before you even get to the point of stretching a canvas or applying some gesso or whatever medium you're working in. And then even once you get to that point, you go through so many revisions and so many maybe doubting, like, well, maybe this hand shouldn't look like this, or maybe I shouldn't use this color. You might go back over and re-gesso it again, you know. So I think when people see the end result, they just don't really understand how much, how many lefts or rights, like you were saying earlier, how many turns you've made in coming up with the final image. And you still might not even really be truly satisfied with the way it turned out, but you knew you just had to get it out and move on to the next thing that's coming up in your head. So,
and as a professional artist, you do reach a point where you I think most professional artists know when it's finished, when they can no longer contribute to the journey of this image.
Mm-hmm.
And some artists get really bogged down in it, and some artists feel very, very comfortable. I can almost feel when I'm at that point to move on.
I think it's all about process, really. If you enjoy the process and you're engaged in process, you're just going to keep creating art. It doesn't even matter the particular style that you end up working in, because it's all you anyway. So what we are, we're like miners, just, you know, digging deep to find out what's in us, you know, and we're enjoying the process along the way, because you just don't know what's going to come out. But you're engaged in it, and you stick with it because this is who you are.
Great. Any other questions?
There are no further questions on the phone.
Again, you could ask questions using your the chat feature, or you could ask a question live.
We have one more question from Cedric Wells. Please go ahead.
All right. And I apologize for taking up all the questions, but I see it as an opportunity for me. Question surrounding the medium and what's currently, I guess, accepted, you know, by society. It appears that a lot of color and, you know, things like that is what really people are, you know, they draw to. What do you think about, you know, artists that use charcoal or coloring pencils? I mean, something that's not on canvas. Do you think there's really a big market out there for African-American artists using those mediums?
As a professional artist of 31 years, I've seen every kind of medium out there represented. You have to work with what your vision is. I mean, I don't think there is any, whether you use color, whether it's black and white, whether it's a trend that people levitate to. I do think there's some characteristics of African-American art when it does color. It's always the first thing that people respond to is the color in our pieces. So, but no, there's no linear. All of us have used all of the media we're talking about. Most of us have just as many black and white pieces or muted colored pieces as we have colored pieces.
Yeah, and I think it all boils down to your collector and what level or stage they might be at or how seasoned they are. You know, I think maybe your first time collectors, they're novice. You know, they don't really have a clear idea on what it is that they're collecting, or maybe have a particular style or approach to their collecting yet, because collecting is an art in and of itself. So they're kind of feeling their way through, just as maybe the artist was when they first started down their path creating the work. So they might start out with, I'm going to collect works that, you know, match maybe to the core of my living room or my bedroom. I'm going to start collecting there and put art there, or in the hallway or in the foyer or whatever. I want something that's going to, you know, pop and kind of really work with the paint on the wall or the furniture in the room. And, you know, they'll seek out art that kind of fits into that. And then maybe as they get a little bit more down the road, they'll say, you know what, you know, maybe they see an artist out there, maybe in their travels, or maybe they come across reading about an artist, either an old master, or it can be a contemporary artist that just does really powerful work through charcoal or black and white, and that gets them collecting now, you know, works that kind of have them feeling that vibe. So it all kind of just stems on where the collector is in their collecting process, and where they are and where they're comfortable with the type of work that they want to beautify and surround themselves with on a daily basis. So I try not to get too bogged down into that. I never have felt really compelled to create a work to match someone's decor or living room. You know, that's, I think that's one of the main reasons why I got out of the print market aspect of doing artwork, because a lot of the feedback I was getting was, you know, the work people love, but, you know, they were asking me questions similar to that. Well, I don't like the colors in it because it doesn't work with my bedroom or my living room or what have you. And, you know, I just couldn't see myself, you know, creating a piece just strictly to think about how it was going to look in someone's bedroom. I had to create something that, you know, was coming from me and from my heart. So that again, I think, plays a key part into maybe where, you know, one style of art is more popular or seems like it's more popular than another. But as the collector grows, you know, so will the type of work that they start to, you know, put around them. So.
Great, thanks.
You're welcome.
So we're right at 2 o'clock, so we'll see if there's any additional questions that are on, that are live. Any questions on the line, operator?
There are no further questions.
Okay, great. Well, I will hand it over to Janine Lusan, who is our executive leader for an AF corporate here in Fairfield. Janine?
Good afternoon, and I just want to thank everyone for calling in this afternoon for this session. Excuse me. I also want to thank all of the artists that were featured in this year's Black History Month art exhibition. Particularly want to thank Valerie Cooper from Picture That for really helping to give this work light, for helping to give it exposure, and working with the African American Forum. A special thanks to the three artists who participated today, Larry Poncho Brown, Dane Tillman, and David Wilson. And we want you to know that we admire your talents and really appreciate that you have shared today your experiences, your visions, and some of your strategies in producing your art. In working for GE, our days are usually pretty busy and swamped with metrics and business strategies and things like that. So I think this has given us a moment to pause, a chance for us to really stop and breathe deeply and enjoy the present moment and appreciate the value of what you do. So we thank the three artists today, Valerie and all of the other artists who were in our gallery this year. And hopefully this virtual presentation has been useful for people who are not able to physically go and see the art. And it's a wonderful medium for us to be able to provide it to a wider audience. And thank you, Wendy, for helping to coordinate everything today. So thanks, everybody, for calling in, and have a good afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.